Pacifica. This is Democracy Now!
This is unprecedented. In American history, never has the Speaker of the House and the majority denied a member of Congress a vote on matters of war and peace.
House Republicans block a resolution to end U.S. military support for the Saudi-led war in Yemen by sneaking in a one-line rule change to an unrelated bill about wolves. We speak with the resolution sponsor, California Congressmember Ro Khanna, an outspoken critic of U.S. support of the war in Yemen, where the U.N. says a child now dies every 10 minutes. Then to Chicago, where community members are demanding answers after a black security guard, Jamel Roberson, was gunned down by a white police officer after restraining a shooter who opened fire in a bar.
He had somebody on the ground with his knee in his back with his gun on him, like, don't move. Everybody was screaming out, security. He was a security guard. And they still did their job and saw a black man with a gun and basically killed him.
We speak with Jamel Roberson's lawyer and Jamel's partner, who's pregnant with their second child. Then to Vermont, where activists are suing ICE, the Department of Homeland Security, and the Vermont Department of Motor Vehicles in a major lawsuit claiming immigration agents are targeting undocumented organizers for their political work.
But as we stand up and fight for our rights, we are hunted down and targeted by ICE. And that's why we are here today, to stand up for our rights and file this lawsuit against ICE and the Vermont Department of Motor Vehicles.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. House Republicans have quashed debate on a resolution that aims to end U.S. military support for the Saudi-led war in Yemen. Congress members voted 201 to 187 on the bill Wednesday, approving a provision that blocks the Democrats from forcing a vote on the U.S. role in Yemen under the War Powers Act. The House vote came just one day after an airstrike by the U.S.-backed Saudi-led coalition killed at least seven people in the port city of Hodeida. The airstrike targeted a bus of civilians who were fleeing violence. The United Nations is warning 14 million Yemenis are on the brink of famine as the U.S.-backed Saudi-led invasion rages on. One new study is estimating the war has killed at least 57,000 people since the beginning of 2016. We'll have more on this story after headlines with Democratic Congressmember Ro Khanna. In Saudi Arabia, the public prosecutor has announced 11 indictments. He will seek the death penalty for five of the accused men in the murder of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi, who entered the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, Turkey, on October 2nd and was never seen again. The Saudi prosecutor affirmed Turkey's account that Khashoggi was given a lethal injection before his body was dismembered and smuggled out of the consulate. The prosecutor, who answers directly to the Saudi prince, Crown Prince, blamed the operation on a senior intelligence officer, not Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Earlier this week, new details emerged about a Turkish audio tape that reportedly captured the last moments of Khashoggi's life. A member of the Saudi kill team responsible for the assassination is reportedly heard saying on the phone to a top aide to the Crown Prince, quote, "Tell your boss, and the deed was done." In California, at least eight more deaths have been reported from the Northern California campfire, already the deadliest wildfire in California's history, with close to 300 people still missing. Another death was reported in the Los Angeles area, Woolsey Fire, bringing the statewide total to at least 59 people killed. The campfire forced more than 50,000 people to evacuate the town of Paradise and surrounding communities, many of them now sleeping in cars or donated tents in a Walmart parking lot in the nearby city of Chico. As Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke toured the devastation Wednesday, he attempted to strike a more cooperative tone after President Trump blamed California forest management last week and threatened to cut off aid. This is California Governor Jerry Brown speaking Wednesday.
Yeah, this is so devastating that I don't really have the words to describe it. It looks like a war zone. It is. It's the devastation that only fires of this kind could bring about. Nobody's really expecting it, but it happens.
CAL FIRE says five firefighters were injured during the Camp Fire's first 24 hours, including two incarcerated firefighters who suffered burns. California's prison firefighters make just a dollar an hour battling on the front lines, but are rarely eligible to get jobs as firefighters after their release. To see our special report interviewing prisoner firefighters from Northern California, you can go to democracynow.org. A new report in the journal Nature finds climate change intensified rainfall in hurricanes Katrina, Irma, and Maria by up to 9%, making the storms deadlier and more destructive. Scientists predict that increasing temperatures could further intensify future rainfall and hurricanes by up to 30% in the most extreme cases. In Florida, recounts of the tight Senate and gubernatorial races are scheduled to end today, as multiple counties have reported a range of issues during the machine recount process. Palm Beach County has asked for an extension for providing the final recount tally after machines overheated, causing discrepancies in the results. In heavily Republican Bay County, votes submitted by fax or email were reportedly counted, even though such ballots are not legally allowed. Democratic incumbent Senator Bill Nelson has filed several lawsuits, including a motion to extend the deadline for the machine recount. Meanwhile, Florida's governor and Republican Senate candidate Rick Scott traveled to Washington, D.C. to attend freshman senator orientation Wednesday, even though the race has not yet been called. In New Jersey, former Obama aide Democrat Andy Kim has flipped another congressional seat, beating incumbent Republican Congressmember Tom MacArthur. Kim is the first Korean-American congressmember to be elected in New Jersey and the first Korean-American Democrat elected to the U.S. House of Representatives. In Georgia, police arrested 12 Black Lives Matter protesters Wednesday for holding balloons in front of the Capitol building that spell out 340,134, which is the number of voters believed to have been wrongly purged from Georgia voter rolls by then-Secretary of State Brian Kemp, who's also the Republican candidate for governor. Their protests came as a federal judge ordered Georgia election officials to review every provisional ballot cast during last week's midterm election, while barring the state from certifying election results before Friday. Kemp's repeatedly said the election's over, even though his challenger, progressive Democrat Stacey Abrams, is about 0.2 percentage points from forcing a runoff election in December. The Florida and Georgia vote counts continued as President Trump blamed Republican losses in the midterm elections on voter fraud. In an interview with conservative website The Daily Caller Wednesday, Trump said of Democratic voters, quote, sometimes they go to their car, put on a different hat, put on a different shirt, come in and vote again, unquote. Trump also repeated an earlier false claim that people are required to show ID to purchase groceries, saying, if you buy a box of cereal, you have a voter ID. During the same interview, President Trump issued a warning to the anti-fascist movement known as Antifa. Trump said, these people, like the Antifa, they better hope the opposition to Antifa decides not to mobilize, because if you look, the other side, it's the military, it's the police, it's a lot of very strong, a lot of very tough people, tougher than them and smarter than them, potentially much more violent, and Antifa's going to be in big trouble, the president threatened. Pentagon Chief Jim Mattis is defending President Trump's decision to send thousands of troops to the U.S.-Mexico border, saying it's providing the soldiers with good training for war. Mattis toured a newly constructed military base near the border in McAllen, Texas, Wednesday, alongside Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen. When asked by a soldier what the objectives of the deployment are, Mattis responded, long-term, it is somewhat to be determined, unquote. The visit came as some migrants arriving at the U.S.-Mexico border in California attempted to enter the U.S. Wednesday. At least 9 people were arrested by Border Patrol. In New York, the immigrant rights group, the New Sanctuary Coalition, has launched a sanctuary caravan to assist migrants arriving at the U.S.-Mexico border as part of the Central American Caravans. The sanctuary caravan will bring volunteers to the border, where some are planning to camp out for 40 days and 40 nights as they offer assistance on both sides of the border. President Trump is backing a criminal sentencing reform bill in what many are praising as a bipartisan effort to overhaul the way certain crimes are sentenced in the courts. The proposed reforms include rehabilitation programs for former prisoners and a reduction in mandatory minimum sentences for certain crimes. The First Step Act has been endorsed by the Fraternal Order of Police and is supported by many conservatives, including Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and the Koch brothers. A number of progressive groups, including the ACLU, which had previously opposed an earlier House version of the bill, have also come out in support. Some Democratic lawmakers are seeking improvements to the bill before endorsing it, including Senator Booker of New Jersey. More news from D.C. Deputy National Security Advisor Mira Ricardo has been reassigned within the administration following First Lady Melania Trump's statement Tuesday calling for her dismissal. In Los Angeles, police officers arrested lawyer Michael Avenatti Wednesday on suspicion of domestic violence. Avenatti emerged as a public foe to Trump over the past year, representing Stormy Daniels in her defamation lawsuit against Trump over hush payments Trump allegedly made to silence her over a 2006 affair. Avenatti also represented Julie Swetnick, who accused Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh of attending student parties where gang rapes regularly took place. In July, Avenatti announced he was exploring a presidential run for 2020. Avenatti has denied the charges of domestic violence against him. In New York, a taxi driver took his own life earlier this month, becoming the eighth driver for hire in the city to die by suicide over the past year. 58-year-old Roy Kim of Queens acquired his New York City taxi medallion just last year and was reportedly struggling with a debt of over $500,000. New York Taxi Workers Alliance executive director Bairavi Desai said, quote, owner drivers have suffered a deep and vicious slide from the middle class into crushing poverty in just a few short years. Banks and lenders need to work with the city and philanthropy to write off 20% of outstanding debts, lower interest rates, and restructure contracts. A new report by the New York Times reveals Facebook executives, including Mark Zuckerberg and Chief Operating Officer Sheryl Sandberg, were aware of a Russian misinformation campaign on Facebook and took a series of private actions to preserve the company's reputation. Facebook reportedly hired the Republican opposition research firm Definers to discredit critics of Facebook, linking them to the billionaire liberal donor George Soros. Facebook also allegedly lobbied a Jewish civil rights group to condemn criticism of the company as anti-Semitic. In Washington, D.C., the Republican-controlled Senate on Wednesday blocked legislation aimed at protecting special counsel Robert Mueller's Russia probe. The bill, brought by Republican Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona, with support from Democratic Senator Chris Coons of Delaware and other Democratic senators, was blocked by Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who argued the investigation is not under threat. Senator Flake vowed to withhold his vote on judicial nominees if the Republican leadership continues to block a vote protecting Robert Mueller. In Britain, Prime Minister Theresa May received the backing of her cabinet Wednesday on the draft Brexit deal arrived at earlier this week after talks with the European Union. In spite of May's announcement, two members of the Prime Minister's cabinet resigned today in opposition to the deal, including Brexit Secretary Dominic Raab. Israeli Defense Minister Avigdor Lieberman resigned Wednesday in response to the Egypt-brokered ceasefire between Israel and Hamas-led factions in Gaza. Lieberman will retain his position as foreign minister, and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will take over the position of defense minister temporarily. Lieberman's resignation may imperil Netanyahu's leadership by weakening the right-wing coalition he leads in parliament. Lieberman also called for early elections in Israel. And a newly declassified report reveals the CIA considered using so-called truth serum drug to interrogate 9/11 suspects in the aftermath of the September 11, 2001 attacks. The report, released Tuesday, details a research program known as Project Medication, in which the CIA worked with medical professionals who ultimately decided against asking the Justice Department to approve the use of any such drugs. Attorney Dror Laden of the American Civil Liberties Union says the program led doctors to violate their Hippocratic Oath to do no harm. He said the CIA has a history of experimenting with drugs on detainees.
So the CIA would apply LSD to people without them knowing about it. They would inject people with barbiturates without them knowing about it. And the same sort of thing was happening in the Soviet bloc. And when the public found out about this in Senate hearings in the 70s, there was a tremendous blowback against the CIA. And the CIA vowed to never do it again. And all these prohibitions were placed. You know, just 30 years later, the CIA was considering it again. And in a very twisted way, some of the medical professionals convinced themselves that if they found a true serum, then maybe they could stop torturing people. So instead, they'd just be injecting them with drugs against their will.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers around the country and around the world. House Republicans have quashed debate on a resolution that aims to end U.S. military support for the Saudi-led war in Yemen by sneaking a single line into an unrelated resolution about wolves. The House voted 201 to 187 on the bill Wednesday, approving a provision that blocks the Democrats from forcing a vote on the U.S. role in Yemen under the War Powers Act. For nearly 4 years, the United States has played a key role supporting the Saudi-led invasion, which has devastated Yemen, creating the world's worst humanitarian crisis. The UN is warning 14 million Yemenis are on the brink of famine. One new study has estimated the war has killed at least 57,000 people since the beginning of 2016. We're going to be joined in a minute by Ro Khanna, Democratic congressmember from California, who introduced the legislation in the House. But first, let's go to him responding Wednesday to the Republican move.
This is unprecedented. In American history, never has the Speaker of the House and the majority denied a member of Congress a vote on matters of war and peace. This is basically rendering ineffectual the War Powers Act. And what the majority is saying, that if the President of the United States and the Speaker believe we should be in war, we should be in war. It doesn't matter what members of Congress think. And when history is written, they're not going to say Jim McGovern did this, or Ro Khanna did this, or Newhouse did this. They're going to say, how did the Congress not allow a vote while hundreds of thousands of kids were not allowed food and medicine?
This all comes as the Trump administration is facing growing pressure over its close ties to Saudi Arabia following the murder of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi inside the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, Turkey, on October 2nd. The Trump administration recently announced the U.S. will no longer provide refueling to Saudi planes bombing Yemen, but it did not end other forms of assistance to the Saudi-led coalition, including intelligence and weapons sales. The House vote came just one day after a Saudi airstrike by the U.S.-backed coalition killed at least seven people in the port city of Hodeidah. The airstrike targeted a bus of civilians who were fleeing violence. For more, we go directly to Washington, D.C., where we're joined by Democratic Congressmember Ro Khanna. Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Congressmember Khanna. Explain what happened on the floor of the House yesterday.
Well, thanks for having me back on. It was really an outrage. In American history, the precedent is that any member of Congress can bring a war powers resolution to force a vote on matters of war and peace. And the Congress has to allow for a vote within 15 days. We brought a resolution to stop our refueling and logistical support of the Saudis in their bombing campaign in Yemen. Under the rules, under the statute, we were entitled to a vote within 15 days. The Republicans didn't allow us to have that vote because they feared that they would have Republican defections. As it is, 15 Republicans stood up against the Speaker, against this move. And so they know that the public opinion, even in their own body, is changing, and they didn't allow us to have a fair vote.
And Ro Khanna, can you explain what you fear are the broader implications of what the Republicans did yesterday?
Well, Congressman Newhouse said, what's the difference? Why can't you just wait till January when you're in the majority? But that statement comes from ignorance. We know that 500,000 children face death because of malnourishment, because they're not getting basic food, they're not getting medicine. And the reason that is the case is the coalition is bombing the port of Hodeidah, and humanitarian workers aren't allowed to get food and medicine into Yemen. Now, bracket the politics. I believe the coalition has been more to blame than the Houthis. The Houthis don't have clean hands. They are backed in some cases by Iran. But put aside the politics. Everyone, whether you're more sympathetic to the coalition or more sympathetic to the Houthis, knows that there needs to be an immediate cessation of violence. And it's the Saudis that are bombing the ports that aren't allowing food and medicine in. All this resolution would have done is stopped that violence to allow humanitarian aid in. Unfortunately, now we're going to have to wait months. And every day we wait, a Yemenese child is dying. There are reports that a child dies every 10 minutes in Yemen.
Congressman Khan, let's go back to Republican Congress member Dan Newhouse, who you referenced, suggesting the vote should take place when the Democrats gain control of the House in January. But he began his remarks by saying your resolution is based on a faulty premise.
Nobody's afraid to debate anything here on the House floor. The fact is, though, that the U.S. is no longer providing the very support that the Khanna resolution seeks to cut off, making this action unnecessary. It's based on a factually faulty premise. We are not involved in hostilities in Yemen, so the War Powers Act should not apply. As a result, even if this resolution passed both chambers, DOD would not need to alter any of its activities.
So that's Republican Congressman Dan Newhouse. Your response, Congressman Khanna.
Well, it's not based on an understanding of what's going on. We are involved in logistical support with the Saudis. We're involved in helping them with targeting. We have Green Berets that have been involved in the Saudi campaign in Yemen. Now, the Republicans used to argue that we weren't refueling or that refueling Saudi planes didn't constitute engagement in hostilities. Mattis and Pompeo fortunately have announced that they're going to stop refueling, but that's not a binding decision. They could restart that fueling in a month if they decided. So what we need is Congress to make it clear that we're going to permanently stop refueling, but we also need to stop the logistical support and intelligence support that we're giving the Saudis.
What does your resolution have to do with wolves?
Absolutely nothing. And this is what people hate about Congress. What the Republicans did, they wanted to have a resolution that would allow for hunting of wolves and not have wolves be listed on the Endangered Species Act. And they knew many Republicans would want to vote for that. And so they linked a vote on my resolution to the vote on wolves so that Republicans who would vote against my resolution coming to the floor if they agreed with the position on wolves. It was a parliamentary maneuver, and we've never seen those kind of shenanigans with a war powers resolution. And here's the sad thing. They're not just hurting children in Yemen and the humanitarian crisis. They're undermining their own role as members of Congress. The framers intended Congress to be Article 1 of our Constitution for a reason. They thought Congress was the most powerful branch that would have jurisdiction over matters of war and peace. In fact, Madison was so concerned about Congress, he thought Congress would have too much power, given that they had a direct relationship with the public. He could never have imagined that Congress would voluntarily give up its power to the president. That's what this Republican Congress is doing.
Well, Congressman Khanna, I want to go back to what you just talked about, which is what Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and Defense Secretary Mattis said. Both of them seem to emphasize, even though they said that a ceasefire should occur now, they both seem to emphasize that the burden of the ceasefire lies with the Houthis in Yemen. So could you explain why that is, whether other Republicans share that view, and what that means about what they're asking ultimately Saudi Arabia to do? Because if Saudi Arabia's stopping their strikes is contingent on what the Houthis do, Are they really calling for Saudi-led coalition strikes to cease?
Well, that's exactly right, Nermeen. And this is why we need Congress to make it clear that there should be an unconditional requirement that the Saudis stop the bombing. The Republican view, Pompeo's view, Mattis's view, and several of the neocons in Congress's view is that Iran poses a threat to the region, that Iran is aiding the Houthis, and that while the Saudis aren't perfect actors, we should be supportive of the Saudis to contain Iran's growing influence in the region. That's why we've had a policy more sympathetic to the coalition. Now, I think Pompeo and Mattis saw the same pictures that all of us did in the New York Times of young kids starving to death. And they knew that there was finally an outcry in this country. The policy that they've announced, though, is conditional on the Houthis changing their behavior. Regardless of whether you think the Houthis are to blame in some way or not, what we need is a stop, is a cessation of the bombing in the port of Hodeidah. That is the immediate task. That's why food and medicine isn't being able to get to the kids and to the civilians in Yemen. And so any person who's looking at this fairly would say, let's have that cessation of bombing. And then you can have Mike Griffith at the UN negotiate what the proper political solution should be between the Houthis and the Saudis.
Clearly, the Trump administration felt vulnerable with their close ties to the Saudi regime after the killing of Khashoggi, the murder of the Washington Post columnist on October 2nd in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, Turkey. And so they started to talk about some kind of ceasefire, although it looks like they're trying to stop the kind of moves that you're involved with now on the floor of the House. Earlier today, the Saudi prosecutor, who answers to the Saudi crown prince, said they're going to be putting five of the murderers to death, who they've said murdered Khashoggi. Can you talk about this investigation? Presumably, they've now finished their investigation, that President Trump and his son-in-law, senior advisor Jared Kushner, very close to the crown prince, have endorsed. What do you make of today's announcement by Saudi Arabia?
Well, I think the Saudis are trying to deflect blame. There are reports that the crown prince was aware that Khashoggi was going to be murdered. And it's very important to understand why Khashoggi was murdered. His last column in the Washington Post was calling for the end of the barbaric campaign in Yemen. He was murdered precisely because he was speaking for hundreds of thousands of Yemeni civilians who didn't have a voice. And I'm glad that Khashoggi's murder has awakened the conscience of the United States and the world community about what was going on in Yemen. But the way we honor Khashoggi is not simply to seek retribution for the killers who took his life. It's to make sure that the killers who are taking the lives of children in Yemen and hundreds of thousands of Yemeni civilians are brought to justice and that that stops. That's really the bigger issue that Khashoggi was concerned about.
And what about, Congressman Khanna, the role of the United Arab Emirates and what U.S. support for the UAE is, separate from Saudi Arabia?
Well, they've been complicit. They have been part of the coalition. The majority of the bombing is still being conducted by the Saudi regime. But the UAE has participated in the bombing, has participated in that support. And to your earlier point, one of the reasons that Pompeo and Mattis called for a ceasefire of violence is they knew they were losing support in Congress. They knew that this war powers resolution was pending, that it was going to come for a vote, that they have 15 to 20 Republicans defecting, many from the Freedom Caucus, and they wanted to try to preempt that. And they did it in language, as you pointed out, that gives them a loophole so that they can blame the Houthis and the cycle of violence continues. But my plea to even Republican colleagues is look at the humanitarian catastrophe. It's in no one's interest that kids and women continue to die and that you have a famine, as you pointed out, that could affect 14 million people. To put that in context, 800,000 people died in Rwanda, 100,000 died in Bosnia. the West Bengal famine, which is the worst in recorded human history, at least recent history, was 3 million people. And if we don't do something here, you could have almost 14 million people not have food or medicine. It's a issue that is of unproportional suffering, indescribable suffering, and we need to act.
I know you have to leave, Congressmember Khanna, but very quickly, is your next act going to be once there's a Democratic House? And your response to that tape recording that's been released by Turkey to a number of governments, including the U.S., where a member of the Saudi kill team responsible for the assassination is reportedly heard saying on the phone to the top aide, to the crown prince, tell your boss the deed was done.
Well, I do think there's very serious concern that the crown prince knew about the killing. And it makes sense that he would know about the killing. You don't just have a journalist be taken to a consulate and killed by 10 to 15 people and the highest levels of government not knowing about that, especially when that journalist is criticizing the government's policies in a war. So I believe that personally, that the crown prince did have knowledge about what was going on. He may have even authorized it. Of course, we need to continue to investigate it, but there is emerging circumstantial evidence that that is the case. Our next step is two things. First, the Senate may take up the resolution. Bernie Sanders has been a very strong, clear voice for over a year and a half on this issue. I'm hopeful he will take this up in the Senate with Mike Lee and Rand Paul. If the Senate passes it, then we will bring it up again in the House before the lame duck session ends, because we don't have time to waste. If the Senate doesn't pass it, then we will push to have this done in the first weeks of January. But the Saudis should know that the resolve of Congress is to bring this war to an end, that their relationship with the United States is fundamentally altered, and that public sentiment in Congress is no longer on their side.
Congressmember Khanna, we thank you for being with us. We know you have to race off to a meeting. The Democratic congressmember from Silicon Valley, California, has been a leading critic of U.S. support for the Saudi-led bombing of Yemen. This is Democracy Now! When we come back, what happened outside Chicago when a black security guard in a bar, after shooters opened fire, tackled the shooter, and then the police moved in and killed him, the African-American security guard? Stay with us.
Inside this mess, they've lost themselves. Come, look at them. Come and see them crawling to satisfy their vanity. So you say now modern times have grown that no human must be left behind, that all you rush forward with tire, life for sale, debauchery, no dignity, I say.
What a shame, by Sumu. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
We go now to Chicago, where a community is demanding answers for the police killing of a black security guard in the Chicago suburbs. 26-year-old Jamel Roberson jumped into action early Sunday morning when a shooting broke out at a bar where he was working as a security guard. Roberson was restraining a shooting suspect outside when several police officers arrived on the scene. A white police officer from the Midlothian Police Department then opened fire, shooting Roberson. Witnesses said the police officer opened fire even though police at the bar were screaming that Roberson was a security guard. Roberson was armed and held a valid gun owner's license. This is Adam Harris, who witnessed the shooting, speaking with WGN-TV in Chicago.
He had somebody on the ground with his knee in his back with his gun on him, like, don't move. Everybody was screaming out, security. He was a security guard. And they still did their job and saw a black man with a gun and basically killed him.
Meanwhile, the Illinois State Police is defending the actions of the police officer who shot Jamel Roberson. A report by the state's Public Integrity Task Force claimed that Roberson was not wearing a security guard uniform and ignored verbal comments to drop his gun. Witnesses have contradicted the state report, claiming he was wearing a uniform and a hat that was labeled security. Greg Kulis, an attorney for Roberson's family, told the New York Times, quote, "We are 3 days into this, and they are saying preliminarily that it was a good shoot. They traditionally take 9 months or longer."
Jamel Roberson's death comes in the wake of a series of mass shootings in America, including the massacre at a Pittsburgh synagogue last month, where a gunman killed 11 Jewish worshipers. President Trump said after the shooting, if there were armed guards inside the synagogue, the results would have been different. This is community activist Eric Russell of the Tree of Life Justice League, who protested outside the Midlothian police station on Tuesday.
The president of the United States says that the best way to stop a mass shooting is a good guy with a gun. But I think what the president really wanted to say, as long as that good guy isn't black, Jamel Roberson is a hero. He prevented mass casualties.
Jamel Roberson was father of a 9-month-old son named Tristan. His partner, Avantia Boos, is pregnant with their second child. For more, we go to Chicago, where we're joined by Avantia Boos, partner of Jamel Roberson, and civil rights attorney Lee Merritt, representing the children of Jamel Roberson. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Avantia, first of all, our profoundest condolences on the death of your partner.
Thank you.
Can you tell us what you understand took place? It was in the town right of Robbins. It was the Midlothian police. And Jamel was a security guard there that Saturday night?
Yes.
And what is your understanding of what then took place?
It's just crazy. I wish it never happened.
Lee Merritt, you're representing the children of Jamel Roberson. Can you talk about what the state police are saying now, since it was state police that shot Jamel dead? Give us the scenario that you understand at this point. He was working at the bar, and someone opened fire and shot the bartender?
Yeah, so he had to expel several patrons. Moments later, they returned, one of them with a gun, and they opened fire on customers, similar to what we saw in Sherman Oaks in California just a week prior. And Jamel sprung into action. He brandished his legally owned firearm, which he displayed. From what witnesses say, he was wearing a security shirt, a security vest, and a hat that said security in big, bright white letters. He actually did what we expect law enforcement officers to do. Jamel answered the question as to how we expect law enforcement officers to deal with deadly situations. He pursued the suspect who had just fired and shot four people. He was able to subdue him, to disarm him, and to hold him until police arrived. And I've talked to some of his friends who are security officers as well, and he said they could only imagine the relief he felt when law enforcement finally did arrive, because he had to keep this person without taking this suspect's life under control until law enforcement arrived. The cavalry arrived, and they showed up and they shot him to death. They didn't give him time to explain that he was doing his job. They ignored several witnesses who have come forward to say they announced to law enforcement immediately, hey, that's a security guard. When they started shouting commands and threats to Jamel, there was a crowd of people present to say, no, he's a security guard. He's doing the right thing. They shot him anyway. And to see them now, 3 days after the shooting, begin to lay out a justification for the shooting. There can be no justification for it. We need to deal with the reality of the fact that not only implicit bias, but a permissive culture where law enforcement officers are allowed to kill about African Americans in the most absurd circumstances. I can't think of facts more absurd than a hero, so almost a superhero in the sense that not only did he do his job, he went above and beyond And he not only saved possibly dozens of lives, but he even preserved the life of the person so that they could stand trial. That's what we expect of law enforcement, and that's what he was denied.
And Lee Mayer, the police department, the Midlothian Police Department, hasn't yet released the name of the officer who shot him. What do you know? Have you learned anything about who the policeman was or policewoman?
And that's the most infuriating aspect of this, because they've offered lip service to this family to say that one statement released by the Midlothian Police Department was that this was almost like a friendly fire incident, where as if one of their brothers in blue had been killed by another brother in blue. That's the lip service that they're offering. But they failed to behave like this was actually a crime. They haven't arrested the officer. He's still gainfully employed. And more importantly, as you pointed out, they failed to ID him. And so the community hasn't had a chance to say this is an officer maybe with a reputation that has used brutality before, that they may have information probative of this shooting. We don't know enough about him. He's not being properly interrogated and scrutinized by the public, let alone the process of policing the police. We don't know anything that we need to know in order to properly investigate this officer.
You know the state police officer was white, is that right?
Yeah.
And Jamel Roberson was black.
Right. From witness statements, the officer was white, as a white male, and Jamel Roberson was black.
And what about the shooter that he had tackled?
I haven't learned anything about the identity of the shooter.
So I want to go to the Associated Press, who reported that Reverend Marvin Hunter told the Associated Press that Roberson was an upstanding young man who played organ and was hoping to become a police officer?
Yes.
Their pregnancy, and because they were coming up on their first child's first Christmas and his birthday, and he was looking forward to that. This was rated as a father. And it's interesting you bring up the Laquan McDonald shooting and the relation to this case, because that same public integrity unit that investigated Laquan McDonald and justified that shooting prior to a judge coming in and releasing that tape, and it was public pressure that caused the indictment of the officer who shot Laquan McDonald. And so it causes me to give pause to any conclusions that the public integrity unit comes to, because in a shooting that was clearly unjustified, they found no wrongdoing on behalf of that officer. It took over a year and continued community pressure and exposure before the truth was arrived to. And so we're in for the same fight, and we're not just going to simply rely on their conclusions.
So what are the steps, Lee Merritt, that you're going to be taking now with the investigation?
Well, we're running a parallel investigation of our own, and where we get to the bottom of some of the information that they're refusing to release. So on behalf of the family, we've hired investigators. We're out gathering witness statements. We are going to supplement the state attorney's office investigation so that they're not only relying on the police to police.
Immediately filed a federal civil rights law.
On the criminal investigation, a civil suit is appropriate to hold the department out.
Roberson, the War and Peace Report, to learn about suit against the Department of Homeland Security on behalf of migrant justice. Stay with us.
She says nobody wants her. Been left alone. She said nobody needs her. Well, girl, you are. If you see her, tell her there is room for her in my arms, in my arms. You don't have to go, you should know. I'll be there for you when you're alone. I'll be to comfort you. Well, baby, please. It's warm in my arms, in my arms. Darling, you should know I'll be around. You blanket when it's cold, babe. I'll
Here in My Arms by Leon Bridges. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
We end today's show with a major new federal lawsuit claiming that immigration agents members were repeatedly subjected to electronic surveillance. At least 20 active members.
Entire evidence that these arrests subjected rights are subject.
That was Enrique Quique Balcazar, Department of Lawsuit. ICE responded by saying, quoting, "See into comment." Lawsuits of the Center for Constitutional Rights here in New York, Justice and National Immigration Law Center. For more, we go to Burlington, where we're joined by Will Lambeck. He's an organizer at Migrant Justice, the Vermont-based group founded and led by immigrant workers. Will, welcome back to Democracy Now! First, explain what Migrant Justice is, what it has to do with the dairy farms of Vermont, and talk about this novel suit.
Amy, Migrant Justice is an organization founded and led by dairy workers here in the state of Vermont. For nearly 10 years, immigrant farm workers who are essential to this state's economy, holding up one of its most important and iconic industries, have been organizing for their human rights, particularly to improve conditions on the dairy farms, successfully doing so through the Milk with Dignity program. And during those years, they have been targeted by ICE for retaliatory arrests. The organization has been surveilled, and ICE has done so with the assistance of the Vermont Department of Motor Vehicles. And so the last 2 years alone, who have been part of Migrant Justice, including 20 active members of the evidence and targeting of the organization. Migrant Justice was key to passing a law in Vermont in 2013, the driver's privilege card, which is a driver's license available to anybody regardless of immigration status. This was a momentous step forward for human rights in the state. Most immigrants in Vermont live in isolation on rural farms with no access to public transportation, and many were spending years at a time on those farms without ever stepping foot off because of lack of access to transportation. People reported feeling like prisoners on their farms. So Vermont passed this law after courageous organizing by farm workers. But immediately after its implementation, the DMV went about undermining its implementation by passing on information, confidential information, of driver's license applicants to ICE. In the case of Enrique Balcazar, who you heard on the tape, the DMV sent ICE just days before Quique's arrest his license plate information, as well as his driver's license application, on which they had written undocumented in block letters on the top.
Last year, Enrique Quique Balcazar was among those arrested by undercover ICE agents in Burlington when leaving the Migrant Justice office. Shortly after he was
in Vermont, there is a united community. We work in the dairy industry, and we know that they are, like all over the world, violation of human rights, things we really do not want to endure. So we organize and we meet in the community, talk about the problems we are facing, and issues of health and so on. So now we are in a campaign which started based on community priorities after having had meetings and doing inquiries in the community about what people wanted to do. We created the Milk with Dignity campaign, which is to guarantee our human rights, to get human rights for dairy workers in terms of wages, work hours, and living conditions. We do hold the big companies responsible because they are getting rich off of us, the immigrants in that state.
So that's Quique Balcazar after he was released. Will, among the companies that Migrant Justice has taken on is Vermont's own Ben & Jerry's, right? These are dairy farms. If you can talk about what was won there by your organization, by Migrant Justice, and also Migrant Justice's work passing the Vermont Driver Privilege Card.
That's right. So in October of 2017, Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream signed an agreement with Migrant Justice, becoming the first dairy company to join Migrant Justice's Milk with Dignity program. It's a binding commitment that requires their suppliers to uphold a farmworker-authored code of conduct, guaranteeing rights and wages, housing, health and safety, scheduling, and to be able to organize free from retaliation and discrimination. Now, over 300 workers in the state of Vermont are covered under this program, thanks to Ben & Jerry's commitment, and the company is paying a premium to those farms in order to redistribute profits down the supply chain so more money gets into the pockets of both farm workers and also struggling farmers. And we are campaigning to expand this program to cover more dairy farms and more dairy companies. This is an example of the type of courageous and transformative organizing that Vermont immigrant dairy workers are involved in. It's protected by the freedom of speech. People are coming together, assembling, and speaking out for their rights. And for their pains, they're being targeted for surveillance, harassment, arrest, detention, and deportation.
Well, Will, I want to go to the comments that Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, has made on the case. It's rejected claims that it targets immigrant rights activists. ICE Acting Deputy Director Matthew Albence stated, quote, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement does not target unlawfully present aliens for arrest based on advocacy positions they hold or in retaliation for critical comments they make. Any suggestion to the contrary is irresponsible, speculative, and inaccurate. ICE focuses its enforcement resources on individuals who pose a threat to national security, public safety, and border security. So, Will, can you respond to that, to what ICE has said?
Well, it's demonstrably false, both in the case of migrant justice and also nationally. This lawsuit is one of a number happening around the country right now, by immigrant community leaders and human rights defenders who have been unfairly targeted by ICE in retaliation for First Amendment activities. From New York to Washington State to Mississippi, immigrant leaders have been targeted by ICE in a de facto national policy of retaliation. But I should say that this campaign against migrant justice predates the Trump administration. This was happening in 2016 under the Obama administration and continues to this day. So in some ways, we see that migrant justice leaders may have been a canary in a coal mine, showing what would be to come under the Trump administration.
Will Lombeck, we want to thank you for being with us. Organizer of Migrant Justice, a Vermont-based group founded and led by immigrant farm workers. We will follow this lawsuit against ICE and DHS and the Department of Motor Vehicles. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is accepting applications for internships in our education, Spanish, outreach, and social media departments. The deadline to apply is today. You can go to democracynow.org for more information. Again, the deadline is today. These are paid internships here in New York City. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Woronoff, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Trina Ndura, Tamaria Studio, and Libby Rainey. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. You can see our video and audio podcasts at democracynow.org, as well as transcripts. Thanks for joining us.